Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, this is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin. This is Anatomy of a Movie.
All right, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for Anatomy of a Movie. I'm John Comerford, and I'm joined on the studio panel by
Phil Svitek,
Sarah Stratton,
Dimitri Panos. Happy October, everybody.
Yes, and also humming in the booth is...
Hello, it's Marissa Serafini.
Oh, great, great. First of all, we want to thank AfterBuzz TV for helping us and allowing us the studio time and incubating this particular podcast series. It's getting us up and running, and we appreciate that. So from now on, we'll be on our own. Well, soon, shortly, we'll be on our own with our own graphics, our own music, etc. We'll bring that to you as soon as we have it. So we just saw Rush, and that's what we want to talk about. It looks
I'm so excited. Now you continue your lovely introduction. I'm just so excited to talk about this movie. I personally am already a huge fan. I'll probably be buying this movie.
Well, you were most looking forward to seeing it, and I think we mentioned that on the last podcast. Did it live up?
Definitely. I think one thing that took me by surprise was I knew I was going into a movie about a rivalry, but I thought the whole thing was really going to be focused on James Hunt, Liam Hemsworth's role. I really thought it was going to be coming from his perspective, just from like ads, seeing all the posters. I've been seeing his face everywhere.
Well, yeah, that's how they're selling it.
Yes, and I was actually shocked. I get to the theater. I saw it in IMAX, which I'm really happy I did, and I advise anyone who hasn't seen it yet to see it in IMAX. But the actual advertisement on the IMAX was Lauda, and I was like, who's that? Like, I thought I was about to see the wrong movie because it was like really small, and I was like, that's not Liam Hemsworth. And so the fact that they did that, and it was this really even between the two, between their histories, between their viewpoints, I loved that. And I love being surprised by moments in like trailers. Mm-hmm. And there's one line in the trailer that I totally thought was coming from Lauda's like, not aspiration, but approval of James Hunt's role. And then I get into it, and it's definitely way more of intense, like, bitterness between the two. So the fact that I was surprised, and I really just felt the adrenaline the whole film, I was really happy.
Great. So it fulfilled your expectations.
Yes.
Dimitri, what do you have to say?
Yeah, it fulfilled my expectations. I'll admit, I didn't go in. As Sarah did. Once I heard that Ron Howard was making this movie and that it was about Niki Lauda, the first thing I did was I went onto YouTube.
Right.
Because I knew there was a crash involved. And I went onto YouTube and checked it out. And, you know, on YouTube, if you search his name, you can see that crash from, like, every angle possible with a bazillion different commentaries. Mm-hmm. So I knew about that, but that's pretty much where I stopped because I didn't know necessarily, you know, they said it was going to be about the rivalry, and I didn't know about the rivalry. So for me, going in, just knowing, like, so when he said I'm known for, at the very beginning of the movie, when it starts off with Niki Lauda's over voice, and he said, you know, I'm known for two things. And he goes, you know, for world champion, and the second thing's coming up. You know where the movie's going to go. It's just, how does it get there, and how does it get beyond that? And to me, I thought it was great. I thought it was one of Ron Howard's more accomplished films. I mean, if his name wasn't in the credits, I don't think I'd necessarily know that it was a Ron Howard movie, per se. But it had the Ron Howard staple of keeping things real and very humanistic. I thought the screenplay was it was very smart. I liked how, from the beginning, you know, it set up the pins. You know, the overvoice pretty much said what was going to happen. This rivalry was made by the media. It wasn't as bad as they say. We were rivalries. We weren't enemies. And they made a whole, you know. Yeah. And then the movie went on to show how the rivalry was, where it gets to the end. And two things happen towards the end, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But two things happen, including an oval voice that says, you know, he was probably the man I most respected most when he's talking about James Hunt and Niki Lauda. And, yeah, and that's what a script should do. A good screenplay should set up the pins, knock them down, bring you from point to point. The other thing that I really loved about it, this movie does not overstay its welcome. It was 2 hours. It got to tell its story. It was lean. It was greatly paced. You know, dare I say this movie was running on all cylinders
Ooh,
for me.
Ooh, nice. Hey. Hey, waiting when that was going to come out.
Right. Yeah, I had that in my pocket.
Phil, so. let us know.
I enjoyed it, you know, and I like how they held out the crash towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of built up to that. And I thought it was a great back and forth. And I liked kind of the switch. And of course, I want to get Marissa's thoughts on this, but then I want to kind of I want to get into a camp of who's on James's team and who's on Nikki's team. Because here's the thing, I was torn. Because, you know, as much as they made out James to be this playboy and things like that, and Nikki to be, quote, the asshole, there was very good qualities about each of them that I liked. And I was like, well, they're both good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're both stupid.
Yeah. But, yes, exactly.
But I think that's the strength of this movie, is that it's not about enemies. It's not about liking one maybe even more than the other.
It's really not a good cop, bad cop, or a black,
yeah,
white.
Yeah, they each had their own style that you sort of kind of respect because they respect it. As characters, they respected one, you know, they respected each other. And from that, they didn't hate each other, obviously. As you get towards the end of the movie, you see that they don't hate each other. And I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. I'm not on anybody's team. I really liked both of them for what they represented and how they each got from point A to point B, or yes, from the start line to finish line. Two different styles that you had to respect.
All right, Marissa, it's your chance.
I really liked this movie. I went into this movie not knowing anything about racing or any Formula One, never heard of that. And I didn't know that this movie was based off of two real people, but this movie made me appreciate the whole art of racing, the technical aspects of it, and all the jargon that they use when they were building the actual race car. But coming out of this movie and seeing how they put it together made me respect the sport and the people who risk their lives every single time they get behind the wheel.
I definitely agree with that.
They're really not unlike. If you ever watched like a movie like The Right Stuff, they're really not unlike test pilots.
Oh yeah,
you know, in a sense, right? Because
well,
test pilots
have
that same thing.
Absolutely. You
have to. You
got
to
live
and,
on the edge.
Yeah, know? And if they know that there's a 20% chance,
every
that
time.
You're going to die, and you know they have, so they have to have. Obviously, if you compare the two, they're going to be a little cocky. You know, they're going to have personality, and so yeah, I think that what you were saying is. Yeah, it's very fascinating how that movie was approached, but I think with Ron Howard, the way that it was written, there was a humanistic element, and to go Team Lauda, Team Hunt, it was like, it's hard to choose between because...
But I agree with Phil, though. There are good and bad points about both characters, and that's what I like, because obviously anything else would have been too easy, but they did a really good job of pinging back and forth, because I was doing the same thing going, yeah, but he, that, no, but he's kind of, but then over here, and he was, so, and I also did not watch any YouTube. I knew of Niki Lauda, all that kind of stuff, but I did not watch anything. I didn't want to read anything. I always like to just have the movie come to me and just present it as itself rather than worry about what it is. But this one thing this did do really wanted me to go back and watch the video and the documentary that the BBC put out, and I guess it was earlier in the year as part of promotion for this. But I think I'm in the minority here, because I don't think I liked it as much as everybody else. I didn't dislike it. There was so much I did like about it. There was so much for me that didn't work and fell perfunctory.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. You mentioned setting up the pins and all
that.
Yeah, and for me, that was in the beginning, it was too perfunctory for me. It was like, okay, he's got this, and now, oh yeah, of course, we got to have this scene, got to have that scene. And it, to me, those things were a little too obvious for me. And it really works for me when the accident happened, because then I really started getting into the characters, and I wanted to know. It was too surface throughout until that happened. And then I was like, there we go. Now we're getting into it. And I wanted to dig deeper into these guys and what set them off as rivals and what created that. And I, especially at the end there, when they started talking and I heard the real voiceover and I saw the real guys, then I'm going, oh, wow, if you had stuck there, I'd be with you more.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I didn't find it perfunctory at all. Like I said, I really enjoyed how it set everything up, because sometimes when you go about a movie like this, you know, a director and or a writer, they can take the tack that it's about the crash. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about the disaster that happens, because let's face it, sometimes disaster sells, and it could have been about everything leading up to the crash. Mm-hmm. But this movie ended up being more about that, where the crash was almost, we sort of knew it was going to come.
Yeah,
But it wasn't about that. It was about these two people bonding, and they bond in their own way.
Yeah.
And that's what I really enjoyed about the movie. And if
I did too,
they didn't exploit the crash.
I like that too. I just wish that it was richer and deeper after. I just wish they had brought that towards the beginning, because the beginning to me wasn't as deep and as rich and as textured and layered as conflicted as the end.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, I disagree, but I think what we also have to realize is that while this story of their rivalry might not be as familiar to us, Formula One, the ideas behind Formula One, the passion behind Formula One is familiar in like the rest of the world. And Rush is, I believe, the number one movie in Ireland and the UK right now. And for me, also, they did exaggerate some of the enemy tendencies. Like, there are exaggerations in this movie that aren't quite factual. And I thought that for us to combine both an international audience and the U.S. audience and kind of have to find that balance of adding history, adding those layers, I think they did a very good job.
I do too. And I take that off of Nikki. Nikki Latta said that he liked the way it came out. He was very positive towards it. He didn't think they Hollywoodized it, as I think that is the term he used, or something like that. So, I mean, that guy, he's the guy that lived through it. So,
if he
thinks they got it right, then okay.
Yeah, and they didn't. Like, they could have really exploited the crash. It didn't look like Driven. That was the other thing, too. I appreciated, again, through direction, I appreciated the race scenes. And again, to Phil's point, I was actually pleasantly surprised that the crash comes in at about an hour and a half 15, or so into the movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're having, again, usually in something like that, you want to exploit that crash.
Right.
It's going to not take place so far down the line.
Crash.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I really respected. The performances for me, too, really sealed the deal. I mean, hey, folks, if you're thinking, if you're thinking that Thor here, like, this is the only thing that Chris Hemsworth can do, I would say if you've seen this movie, you know, he's the real deal. I really appreciated his presence on screen. He has a really good presence. Mm-hmm. And, coming from Captain Kirk's dad, moving himself up to this role, I thought it was really good, and he was great. Both of them were great to watch. I was never bored at their performances, and I loved it when each one was on screen. And
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
He was actually, the role of James Hunt was one of the hardest roles they had casting, and they almost put the film on hold.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just by friends and acquaintances that Chris Hemsworth ended up sending like a makeshift audition tape with some material from the script, and that's what won him over.
While he was working on Avengers, I believe. Isn't that the story? While he was working on Avengers, he had to put together a tape.
I think so.
I was wondering what that costume looked like. he drive with that hammer?
Well, he did it while he was eating falafel.
There you go.
Okay.
If you've watched the very end of the Avengers, folks. And Daniel Brühl was really good too. It's funny when you talk about the marketing.
At least in America, it's all Hemsworth.
It sells
the movie.
So. You get it, but it is really funny that if you were walking by, if you're in a movie theater and you walk by the poster, it's him, you wouldn't know that this is about Formula. You wouldn't know really what this is.
No,
you
would not think about it, because you just see his face, big old mug.
Am I the only one who appreciated too that it was a rated R movie? You know,
I didn't even know to be honest with you, but it makes sense. But I didn't even pay attention to that. I didn't, one way or another, didn't.
That was an aspect of the film.
I mean, all the boobs, you didn't.
No,
that didn't go together.
The nude scene.
My point was, I was involved in the movie. I didn't care what the rating was. I didn't care if it was PG. Obviously, it was. But I didn't, in the movie, go, oh, of course, we're in an R. It didn't matter.
I just liked the fact that, again, if you were going to commercialize this film, you would make the racing, sanitize it, make the racing, have more quick cuts and do this, and it didn't. And I appreciate, again, the decision to go ahead and make an R-rated movie. And, it's 2 weeks in a row where there have been two R-rated movies released the week before The Prisoner came out, and that was number one. Mm-hmm. This movie comes out, and it's number one again, not again, but it's number one, I believe it.
New.
Over
it's
Rush?
The number one right now is not.
It's Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Yeah, not a rated R movie. You're right. I'm wrong. Yes.
And by the way, kick the
40.
it's correct. 35 million as opposed to 10 million for a side.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a big deal then.
It was that's two good. Then.
Yeah.
But it's because it tries harder.
88% on Rotten
Tomatoes. It is getting
88%. Yeah. But, you know, it's... again, I just think that it's something to, you know, something for adults to go to. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I went to The Prisoners, and there were at least three families or three groups of people, I'll call them, who brought kids who were at the very...
You're
least
kidding.
I kid you
to
not.
To The Prisoners?
To The Prisoners. I'm like, what the hell
okay.
are you doing?
All right.
Right? Not the case with Rush.
No.
I guess the kids didn't, you know, kids didn't mind being kidnapped and tortured. And,
that's crazy.
But Rush, no, it was pretty much all adults, you know, couple of dates, but there was not one kid in the theater that I saw it at, which was like, okay, interesting.
All right, let's get into the script a little bit more. Peter Morgan wrote the script, and he obviously wrote Frost Nixon and The Queen. He was nominated for Academy Award. Now, I read that he did this on spec, so he didn't. Nobody hired him to do so. He just thought the story and the characters were so interesting, the real people were so interesting that he wrote the thing, couldn't help but write it because he just had to. And also, I think his wife is Austrian, and he lives in Austria, I believe, so he's very well of Niki Lauda, aware of Niki Lauda. And what do we think of the script? If we can compare it to his other scripts, what do we like about it? What is it that you guys want to discuss about it? Jump in.
I mean, I think that I really loved some of the writing because, for me, I love when lines can circle back and be intersected in different parts of the movie and mean different things. Mm-hmm. And, for instance, about, I want to say, halfway through the movie, you hear a lot of say that happiness is the enemy to his wife, in which she replies, like, you've already lost. But then we get to see later on, at the very end, he also brings back enemies right before saying that he not only liked and respected, but that Hemsworth or Hunt was the one person he ever envied. And taking that and being able to say, well, originally, yes, happiness could be the enemy because it made him lose a little bit of his drive. His enemy or rivalry was what ended up leading him to be happy, leading him to kind of, in a way, feel satisfied, and I feel like you kind of saw that and the change in his mentality. Like when I first got in this film, I was torn between whose side I was going to be on because you end up wanting to pick sides.
Right.
And I kept thinking, oh, well, Hunt's going to be the one to like kind of grow up. Mm-hmm. But I think I really saw through the scripts that it was Lauda who grew up more. He was just like, his nickname in real life was The Computer, and just this like businessman who's just mentally driven to know every detail and kind of be cold and, to me, see life as happiness and makes it feel empty. And he gained so much in his life through this other person.
Well, if you think in terms of script and arcs and everything, well, Lauda is the character.
Yeah,
that has
absolutely.
The arc. You know,
it
Hunt really doesn't have
his,
an arc.
Yeah.
He is the way he is and stays the way he stays.
He stays the way he is. And, I mean, the movie opens up on Lauda's over voice. And it ends on his over voice. You know, I thought the screenplay was really well done. And to your point, I thought it had some great dialogue. Like, one of my favorite... Again, you could have really made this movie about them being enemies, like the media portrayed them to be, like these. But again, one of my favorite lines was James Hunt, Niki Lauda, and James Hunt admits, just to set up the scene, prior to the crash, it was terrible weather. They're having a committee, a meeting with the racers, and Niki Lauda says, guys, I don't think we should do this. He goes, I think we should cancel this race. I think it's a bad idea to get out there. And it's James Hunt who sort of kind of gets the crowd to go with him, going, Niki, come on. Of course you want to cancel the race because then we can't get points. And he sways the crowd to go on with the race, even though James Hunt probably knew in his heart that that might not have been the best decision. The crash happens, and it plagues Hunt for a while, so that when he sees him for the first time, he comes out and says, look, I feel really responsible for what happened. And Niki Lauda comes back with, trust me, watching you win those races while I was fighting for my life, you were equally responsible for getting me back in the car. And that's the competitive nature of a true rivalry, not an enemy, mm-hmm. but like, well, there, yeah, and it, I like
it causes
that.
You to do your best. See, I've always, I never agree with the people that, let's put it this way. I always want, if I'm going to in a competition with somebody, I don't want to win at all costs. I want them to be at their best and then best them. Because that to me is the best win, right?
Right.
Who cares if you win if they're hurt or they're not at their best? Big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it's like, take any sports rivalry, you know, the Ollie Frazier.
Yeah.
They want, you want them working at their best, at their
Bird
peak.
Johnson. Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of that too.
Absolutely.
Because they, again, I like that. Because I was thinking of that because these guys weren't enemies, but they were great rivals. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, no matter what team bested what, they still had the respect and they were comrades.
And here's the other thing I like about the way they wrote the characters is they both were top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
But in a completely different styles, and then you get to see there is not just one way to succeed.
Yes.
I mean, it takes a whole myriad of ideas and thoughts and behaviors, and it doesn't happen to happen in one way. So, I mean, I just liked that part.
And I think that was smart.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's in the screenwriting. I think, absolutely. It's really well done. It's a good character story.
I want to add both of your points.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, boy. There we go. First off, on the conversation you mentioned, also that they added another layer. As Hunt's walking out the door, he says, you could have avoided this, you know, if you had friends.
Right.
And honoring
if you were nicer
to
people,
if
people liked you more,
then you could have swayed the vote yourself, and I wouldn't be your competition on this level outside of the racetrack. So adding those other seeds of doubt that maybe this isn't all Hunt's fault. Like, yes, he did sway the argument, but maybe if, you know, Ladd was just a little bit nicer of a person, he wouldn't have that effect he had.
Right.
And then on your side of the story, what I think one of the overall themes of this movie is that you can gain success if you can identify what drives you the most. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, with Lauda, it's knowing the numbers, it's being that businessman, it's getting everything. And because he embraces who he is allowed to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Hunt, by his, like, we do see a moment in the script where he's defeated in a way, and he has to go in and basically plead to be on the team. And
he's got to beg. He has to beg to get – he'll do almost anything.
Because I think that showed what both characters are willing to sacrifice to give up in order to succeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that
but it's also like how they operate.
Yeah.
It's like you really have to know who you are and know what you need to get you that far and know what motivates you.
The other thing that I really appreciated, I guess from an audience level, because the way they set it up is that Lauda is this rich guy.
Yeah.
And they set him up. And again, I don't know if this was the way it was in real life, but they set him up that he buys his way in.
Apparently, that's true.
No, which I get, right? But what the movie does is, okay, he buys his way in. Okay, can be considered a swarmy way of doing things. But there wasn't one doubt that his intelligence and his knowledge of race car driving and how to put together a car, it was all there. He just... This is the way for
him.
Did
what he had to get his foot in the door.
And
or his butt in the chair, so to speak.
And I'm not entirely sure, again, because I don't know, you know, I'm not too familiar with the background. I'm not entirely sure that his other colleagues and other racers knew his, other than he was just a spoiled rich kid who wanted to buy himself into being racing. I don't know if they understood. Maybe Hunt knew that he was a really smart guy, but maybe everybody else, I don't know if they knew his smarts about knowing his way around a Formula One car and how to put it together and how to shave off like 5 seconds and, you know, and that to me was
2.3.
2.3. Come on. Let's be accurate, guys.
Get it right. We're going to get letters.
It's funny that you say that because I like took it totally different because when he has the conversation with his father, I took it as he was completely getting cut off and had to find these other ways, and how he really got the money was through going and changing these cars and getting contracts through that, and then from there.
Yeah, because he came from a rich family. I didn't really get that he was rich because he was cut off. And in fact, that they both kind of came from that. I think they made that point that we both, our families kind of disowned us. So we started out on our own. And again, I just like that because they start kind of in a similar way. They're both trying like crazy Formula 3.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the families have kind of written them off. And they just have different trajectories in terms of how they get to the top.
But did you get the sense that, like, Hunt's character was a little bit more, like, nuts and bolts? Like,
he's the blue-collar guy. The other guy's a white-collar guy.
Right.
You can kind of see that.
Yeah. And I thought, I liked how they showed it to us. Because in real life, I'm not sure how it was viewed upon their other races and the media.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, we're buzzing a little bit. Sorry, guys.
All right, it's a technical difficulty. We've got that covered. Thank you very much, Marissa. All right, so where are we? Okay, so now, Phil, what did you have to say about the script? You're a writer yourself.
I liked, you know, the biggest thing for me was the way they opened up on that voiceover from Nikki,
yeah.
And then the switch later happens at the time of the crash, where you cut to James, and he says, well, did Nikki change his tires?
Yeah.
Okay, we stick to wet.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Holding that moment, yeah.
Because
Literally,
it just, the fact that they can hold that moment for an hour and a half where basically it ties back to the opening, you know, where they're like, okay, you want to change your tires? And Nikki says, did he change his?
Yeah.
Right.
No.
And if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this one, but I'm pretty sure in the movie later on, it actually switches. It switches the line where someone else asks if Hunt changed his tires on a different race.
On a different race?
Mm-hmm.
I only not in the race of the crash. Talking about.
No, one of the other crash. Go back, watch it. I'm pretty sure that line is said twice, but slightly shifted between who's saying it about whose tires.
Was it made by the guy that was in World War Z?
I don't know. Maybe now we're going to have to watch it again, but I'm pretty sure the line said twice.
But you know what else is fascinating?
Francesco Favini.
You know what was great? The other thing that was about. Okay, I'm not so much into Formula One racing, but there was one name, one racer that I think is world renowned that was featured in the movie, even if he was driving by at a bazillion miles an hour, Mario Andretti.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mario Andretti, I think, is universally known, even to, you know, some of us folks
Here
certainly
in
States.
America.
Yeah. Right. And but it's not about him.
No.
But, like, the fact that he was there, and, like, to me, he was the only, you know, outside of our main characters, he's the only other racer that I was like, oh, Mario Andretti was through this. I know that name, man.
You didn't know Emerson Fittipaldi?
No.
Okay. Just curious. He's another one that most people might know.
Yeah.
Well, I did like Clay. They didn't utilize him too much, but the fact that he said, you know, us teammates, we got to stick together.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, obviously the irony is there that James Hunt and Nikki are more teammates than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, of course. I mean, I think it is interesting, like, how much, when you see a movie, you normally expect there to be more than, you know, two characters that you talk about. Mm-hmm. We have all these other roles, but for me, this is a horrible thing to say as an actor, but, you know, this movie was solely about them. Like, we saw some big names in there, too, like Olivia Wilde, but and she's playing.
I want to talk about that.
She has her own story that was big in the media of the time with her Richard Burton and Liz Taylor, and those are.
Yeah, but you could almost remove her from.
Yeah. I agree. I felt that, yeah.
And and that was what I was going to say also is because I believe Russell Crowe is supposed to make a cameo as Richard Burton.
As Richard Burton.
And it's like, really, it was so easy for them to kind of cut away these other characters. And I think that it's crazy to me that they could, in a way, cut out some of the women, some of the managers, more. Even
here's the
so.
Technique.
And I still would have gotten a lot of the movie.
Here's the technique I feel, right? At the end, when Nikki pulls himself out, it's what does he see? He sees images of his wife, right?
Yep.
And that's why he kind of pulls out and, you know, they left in a helicopter and all that.
Mm-hmm.
For James, throughout the whole thing, it's about him partying and things like that. So these are just distractions. And that's, you know, and Nikki keeps pointing that out to him. Like, you know, I'm focused. I go home. I rest. You don't. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways, it's a technique to show all the different distractions of keeping them from their one thing. It's just basically racing.
Right.
Yeah.
And dealing with it.
Yeah. And like when we talk about the women, it was really funny because with the movie opens with Hunt, Chris Hemsworth coming to the hospital and the girl from Game of Thrones the nurse. And so, you know, so they have a hot
Natalie
and heavy.
Natalie Dormer.
They have a hot and heavy and you know, she's in it for like 5 minutes. And then the next scene when they're at a nightclub, it's like, where'd she go?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You
so
go.
That's how this is going to. All right. So this is how it plays out. But I will say, you know, I think it's probably one of the few times or the first time where Olivia Wilde, she's a very beautiful woman, not a bad actress at all, but I really think she got upstaged by Alexandra Maria Lara, the woman who eventually, she plays Marlene Lotta. And I think that woman.
Well, she certainly has way more screen time. That helps.
Yeah, and but I think the Olivia Wilde character, Susie Miller, could have been played by anybody. Mm-hmm. It was weird that you would pick. You could have just played it by anyone. And I'm glad they didn't go with Russell Crowe, because to me, anyways, that would have been a distraction. I would have said, it would have really taken me out of the movie. I said, oh, that's Russell Crowe. Oh, okay, he's playing Richard Burton. So, yeah, I think that the woman that played Marlene, I thought she was fantastic. And, you know, Susie Miller's character, it could have been played by anybody.
Well, that's kind of goes back to that's one of the reasons why I thought it was perfunctory. There's a lot of that particular, I thought they really could have done a little bit more with that, because it seemed like, okay, now he's getting angry. Okay, here's where he's going to get angry, because he doesn't have his drive anymore. He's going to get mad at his wife. And there he's drinking. And it all seemed very rote to me in that particular thing. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I think it could have played by anybody. Olivia Wilde's a great actress. I no qualms about her or anything like that. I just think they really didn't flesh that out. And I don't think they used that as much as they could. I agree with Phil, though. I think it did show the dichotomy between the two. One has a stable home life, the other one doesn't. You did that. But it really didn't – I didn't think they mined that for enough gold as they could have.
See, and, I totally disagree, because I don't think they need it anymore. I was kind of like, okay, Olivia Wilde.
Well, they didn't need it for this story. I just thought it would have been much more interesting if I would have learned more about him, because I didn't learn anything about him. I already knew he was a playboy, and I already knew he didn't have much to offer and wasn't going to have a relationship. But I thought he could have done more.
But he attempted. Attempted the relationship. And I think, we know he ends up passing away, early in life. But, he attempted. You knew the guy had a heart. His lifestyle, he wasn't changing that much, but it wasn't like he didn't care for Susie Miller. I think that he cared for her a lot.
I don't think he did care for her a lot. Just in reading, though, there are these other little facts that they do they throw in about him. He's obviously said, I'm sure you guys have read, to have slept with 5,000 women and in his short life, and that one of them was stewardesses, and they threw that in, that he didn't like to wear shoes, and there's a frame of that. But with Susie Miller, it is accurate that he proposed to her within weeks. Mm-hmm. And then when they got divorced, a lot of people said that he was actually thankful to be divorced from her, and Richard Burton paid $1 million to James Hunt in their divorce settlement. And it even goes that Susie in real life said that she felt like she was traded. So I don't know that it was inaccurate for him.
See, I think that what you just said was far more interesting than what I saw on screen.
It makes me wonder if there was a deleted scene.
Well, could
have
been.
Because when he went to New York, and there was a scene with the two of them, and he walks out.
Yeah, I like
and
all that the press scene. That scene is great.
And he's like, "Well, let's see. I get to continue to race, and I get to continue to be with women,
the
and I get
to me
a lot
is
of
this.
Dependent money
with his wife." I got to see how that affected Nikki on a character level.
Right.
With this Susie Miller, I did not get to see how it affected him or his driving at all.
No.
That's why I said it was a wasted opportunity. It did nothing to show me character.
Well, and again, if we're looking at it from Nikki Lauda's eyes. Mm-hmm. We already said at the beginning, he's the one that we see change.
But here's the thing
following these two characters.
I'll disagree only because there's, as he's drinking, she says, I can't watch you like this. And you're, she basically, for the first time, James gets called an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Not literally, but in subtext, right?
By a woman anyway. He's called an asshole by a lot of people.
I feel like asshole's the most prominent diss in this movie, and watching how that goes through the script is quite interesting. The first mention of asshole in this script is in the first voiceover, where Lauda refers to himself as chasing Hunt like an asshole, which causes his crash.
Right.
And then, of course, that's the first diss that he gives, and who knows?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was my bad. Sorry.
No worries. All right. But the point being, the fact that, it's moments like that that make you go, okay, this guy, instead of just caring about women and things like that, he actually does want to drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He doesn't want to just do this to be a playboy and things like that. He does love driving. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah.
Marissa, you're being awfully quiet.
But here's the thing. We didn't know that.
Driving, he was happy. He was happy with Susie Miller when he was driving. It was when he was not driving that he wasn't happy with anything in life, and it didn't matter who he had next to him supporting him. Right. But when he was if he continued to drive, I don't know what will happen, but he seemed to be very happy in the position with Susie that he was in and married when he was able to drive.
Mm-hmm.
When that was taken away from him, losing all the money, I don't know. Yeah, Marissa, go ahead. What do you think about the Susie Miller, James Hunt?
Olivia Wilde, she's beautiful and whatnot. And normally she's not forgettable, but this movie, she really was. And I think it was also just the character. And yes, this is a real person that she's based off of, but the way they portrayed this character is that Susie didn't really show a lot of, from what I got, she didn't show as much compassion towards James as Marlene did towards Nikki. Throughout all of Nikki's accidents, you see Marlene always sticking by his side through his trials and tribulations, mm-hmm. and therefore mm-hmm. we get more attached to Marlene, and we like her more so than Susie ever did when she wasn't as supportive when James couldn't get his own drive at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what Marlene's background was. Susie Miller was a socialite, a model, mm-hmm. so she was living a high life. She didn't stand by her men. You know, I think that's a great point because Marlene, well, because Niki Lauda was no saint either. I mean, yeah. this guy treated people horribly, and he was an asshole to some people.
I'm not sure she didn't stick by her man. I think he probably didn't stick by his woman before she didn't stick by her man.
Well, I don't. It, there wasn't any suggestion that while they were together,
yeah, the infidelity. She said that.
When he was racing?
Well, when they were together as man and wife. So the drinking, the infidelities, she said all that. Mm-hmm. And he didn't bat an eye. Yeah.
And also, James didn't really treat Susie as well, too. Because then Susie's like, we should do something this weekend. He
wanted
pretty
to
much
go
told
skiing.
Her
that's
to
what I mean.
Piss
yeah.
off. You know?
Yeah, but I'm going to fall that. Like, he wasn't racing at the time. Everything in his life sucked.
Yeah, but can't say that. I mean, how can you argue that point? While he was racing, he was still having...
He was still doing things.
Here's the problem,
okay,
right?
You got me there.
That ties back to... In the moment in the hospital, it just goes to show how they interact differently, right? Mm, yeah. And it could have been a perfect opportunity. If you understand me, you know this is the one thing that I need, so please just let me do this. Whereas, Nikki said that to her, and she understood, and she backed away and let him put on that helmet, despite him just screaming for days.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you that love me, you'll walk away or you'll shut up.
Don't say anything.
How awesome. Again, that to me is one of those scenes in this movie. It was a great scene. It was an emotional scene. And the fact that it came from, like, when he fought, it was so excruciating
to watch.
Oh, my gosh. But every scene of him in the hospital was just...
The pipe? Pipe.
The
draining of the lungs.
That's right.
Do it again.
And they weren't using a Dyson. No. The vacuuming of the lungs. That was like, oh, my God. But the scene with the helmet, the camera from inside, because you got the perspective of being inside the helmet mm-hmm. and seeing Marlene Lauda mm-hmm. there, and you can tell she was to me, that was one of the best scenes mm-hmm. in the movie. And again, it was very emotional.
I was worried. The one thing I knew about the story was that he, in the crash, Niki Lauda lost his eyelids and had to have them grafted on, and I thought they were going so graphic, and I go, please don't show that. I don't want to see that.
I agree. The pipe on the throat was enough for me.
That was
hard to handle.
But I think they showed a good depiction of what he really did go through.
Oh, yeah.
They really did stick a pipe down his throat.
Oh, yeah.
Twice.
And it is a sign of the times. Yeah. I'm not sure. I've never heard the term vacuum lungs until I saw this movie, and I'm not sure what the technology today is.
And apparently most of that was because of the fire retardant they had to spray and try to put out the fire. Mm-hmm. He had ingested so much of it.
And they had him wrapped up in asbestos.
Let's move on to something else. We have to talk to the director, because we've already talked writing enough, unless anybody has any last words about writing and the script or anything. I want to just talk more about Ron Howard. Dimitri, you were talking about Ron. And I agree with you the fact that if I didn't know that he had directed this, I wouldn't go, this is a Ron Howard film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you look at this guy's career, he's pretty much, he's done almost everything with the exception of horror. And, he has, I have a filmography, 22 movies. Mm-hmm. He's just started on a movie called The Heart of the Sea. Which is written by the same guy, by the way.
Ah, Peter Morgan. Nice.
And, this is a guy that started off with working with Roger Corman. Mm-hmm. He's always had a passion for cars. Mm-hmm. And when you look at things like Grand Theft Auto, mm-hmm. which I believe was his directorial debut, before that
he
was...
Not
with the video game, but, look at this guy's resume. So, Grand Theft Auto, Night Shift, a very...
Underrated, amazing
comedy.
Movie.
Really good. Shelley Long, Henry Winkler, really good.
Oh my God.
I've never seen it.
Oh man, I don't know how it
holds
up, but it was amazing.
Michael Keaton was born
to see Casablanca
from that movie.
Yes.
Casablanca. Oh, jeez.
Another Ron Howard movie.
I'm just trying to create excuses.
No, and then Splash.
Yeah.
I've seen that one.
Oh, yeah. You know, and this is also the same guy, Cocoon.
Yeah.
85. Catch this. 84, he had Splash. 85, Cocoon. 86, Gung Ho. Yeah. And then he does something different. He goes
Gung
Willow.
Gung Ho, also about cars, by the way.
Right, also about cars. and then he goes and does Willow. Yeah.
Which, by the way, might be the only one that is in the horror section.
No, it's more just fantasy.
How it was received.
Yeah, he did something different.
Yeah.
He went from those comedies and everything, and then he goes back to, he follows that up with Parenthood,
yeah.
And he goes Backdraft. Now, I was working at Universal at the time. So at Universal, I had Backdraft, Far and Away, The Paper, and Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look, and then he goes from that, he does Ransom in 96. And then ATV, which was okay. And then How the Grinch Stole Christmas, okay. A Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm.
He follows that
but
up.
I think more than anything, you can look at the range that he's, I mean, he's a great filmography. I mean, because the range. I mean,
and but if you look at all of his, pretty much all of his movies, like they are very, whether you like them, whether they're good, bad, I can't point to anything that I was like, that made me angry, but there's a very humanistic element. And he films, that's the other thing about his filming technique, he's not a flashy director. He likes to get emotion on his actors, which I appreciate. You know, and then he does The Missing. He does, like, a Western. And then he goes off and does Cinderella Man. So he does another sports movie, a boxing movie. And then he follows that up with The Da Vinci Code. So he goes from Cinderella Man, Beautiful Mind, to, like, a thriller suspense kind of a movie that was very popular. And then he takes a... Then he, like, really scales back and makes what's, I guess you can consider, almost an independent movie. He does Frost Nixon, which is a great, great movie. And again, the humanistic elements in Frost Nixon are really make that, whether you know your history or not.
Interestingly, obviously, because Frost Nixon, that's obviously about two different characters. And I saw this the very same way. I mean, in fact, he used a lot of the same team for this. And I thought that, I think that was the approach they took. It's about, you know, you were saying earlier, it's the two characters. That's all you're really paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was very similar in that regard.
And he gets great performances out of his actors, I think. And then
being an actor himself and being in there for so long, I'm sure he creates a great set.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a kid who, like, I think at 18 months was in his first movie. At 18 months.
Yeah, but he wasn't that good at 18 months.
Yeah, well, yeah, he wet the bed a lot.
Wasn't a very strong performance.
I know. And, you know, and then he does Angels and Demons. I guess his only maybe, I mean, of all of these movies, I guess maybe The Dilemma wasn't a great comedy. It was, you know, I mean, he has some movies in there that are okay. Right,
but let's talk about this. Go ahead.
He's always willing to take a shot. I mean, you know, this isn't a franchise movie. This is, you know, based. I mean, it's based off of real life, but it's about, you know, okay, you may sell internationally, but.
And largely independent.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
This is not a Hollywood
so,
movie.
You know, I like that from him, that he's kind of always stuck to something original.
Yeah.
In a time when everything is going, okay, get me another Superman.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Now, has anybody read anything? Is he making those choices specifically because he goes, no, I want to stay more independent in that regard. I don't want to go that route, or is he?
I mean, to answer, you could just with each movie, you see the passion that he puts.
Absolutely,
into,
I'm just
so I think
wondering
it speaks for itself.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I don't know what he's getting offered. I don't. I'm just asking if he says about it. I'm
but here's the thing: he's not. You know, there's been so many articles, you know, in the past about him and Brian Grazer. Not. You know, they used to be able to sell any movie. Now, now it's very tough for them.
That's what I mean. Wondering what the
when we finished watching Rush, I started to think of his filmography, and I'm like going, what was the last movie that he came out with? And we're going, Frost Nixon? Well, that's a long time ago. That was like, Frost Nixon was 2008. You know, even The Dilemma came out in 2011. So we're talking, you know, 2 years. Yeah, I think he's at a point in his life. He produces some good TV shows. You know, he can pick what he wants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this Heart of the Sea, I'm really looking forward to. It's based off the novel, which is drawn from the true story that inspired Herman Melville to write Moby Dick.
Okay.
And so it takes place back in the whaling days in Nantucket. And I think with Ron Howard there, I think we're going to get a really great story. It was a fantastic book. But, you know, he's good.
In terms of this one, though, a lot of people are saying this is one of his best movies in years. Do we agree with this?
It's been years.
But no, but seriously, but do we agree with this? Do we disagree with this?
I think it's one of his more accomplished films, yes. I think as a filmmaker, this one technically had a lot of stuff going for it. You could tell his passion for racing and for race car drivers. I think it's one of his more accomplished films, absolutely.
I would agree. Okay. I mean, on top of all of the character work that I really liked, just I felt the passion for racing that I think it exudes. Just you could feel, for me, I could feel the speed of the cars, the intensity of the cars, the intensity of music, all of that combined into a sport that, although I actually do know a little bit about it, I haven't been to a lot of Formula One, and I felt like I was there, and it made me, like, I'm hoping that the tracks in Texas start doing well and we can bring this sport more here. And when a movie can do that, when a movie can move you to want to experience something also in real life because you were so thrilled by it just on screen, I think that's great. So I would definitely say that this is... he has a lot of my favorite movies, actually. Especially like A Beautiful Mind. And this is such a different direction, and I loved it. So I think he did a great job.
Phil?
I 100% liked it. I liked, you know, in the beginning the credits were kind of rolling and then it stopped and didn't get into anybody else. You know, and I like that. You know, just let the movie be. I kind of hate opening credits.
Oh, okay.
Because then you kind of know what's going to be in it. And, you know, I like that I think to a degree that was
the choice. You just want to jump in.
Yeah, just jump in, and I like that. And, you know, everything was about the characters. You know, even just kind of every shot, you always knew someone was in the background, especially when they're on, you know, in or around the racetrack. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always, okay, James is in the background or Nikki's in the background. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like, you know, and I think he made very specific choices, and that was led by him.
Okay.
Although he did have a good team.
Marissa?
I liked this type of movie compared to his others because you can see him as an actor, him as a director. He's very versatile, and he shows a lot of different strengths here and there, especially his past few movies that he's adapted characters from stories, from, like, books and whatnot. And this movie is adapted from people in real life. And I think he depicted them in such a way, and even the sport, in such a way that we can appreciate everything and really kind of want to learn more about these people and the sport after we leave the movie theater.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I thought what I love most about it is the balance of it. I thought it was a character-driven piece and just in this world, and there wasn't too much of either. Otherwise, it would have been – I just think it would have missed. I like the balance of it. I thought, and I agree that now I want to know more about Formula One. Not only that, but I really want to know more of the story about these two guys. Mm-hmm. I really want to delve into that now because I'm fascinated. I want to know more about it. And for those reasons, I thought he did a great job with his directing on this. I thought it was very well done.
Yeah.
And what else do we have to say about directing on this?
No, I mean, again,
you think
I
he's going to get any Oscar nods?
You know, it's look. Who knows? I don't know. It's.
I think it's too late in the season.
I think it's too early for.
Yeah, I think it's way too early.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I mean, being too early, that's not going to stop a movie like Blue Jasmine getting recognized. I think that with a movie like Rush, if they're going to allow 10 movies to be nominated, you know, this one has a shot of being nominated. I think, my apologies, my mea culpa. Yes, I was wrong regarding, you know, it being number one. But, you know, 10 million, we'll see what the legs are. Listen, CinemaScore, it did really well. Audiences are liking
it.
If it's able to hang around and more is written about it, you know, we'll see. But I don't know. It's a good question. What do you guys think?
I would think for if it did get nominated, it would definitely be for, like, sound mixing, music score, Hans Zimmer. He's amazing, and he's done a lot of, obviously, big work for movies and stuff. So I think it would get more recognized on the technical aspects of the filmmaking rather than performance, even though they were great, and they were great performances from both the two leads. And I think the man who plays Nicky, I'm blanking his name.
Daniel.
Yeah. I think Daniel would get more recognition, maybe as a supporting actor or lead actor, over Chris.
When you brought up that question, it made me say I want them to win something. I do, but when placing it in my head, what they should be nominated for, I'm not sure. And it's I do think it's going to be, I think I agree with you, Michelle, I think it's going to be something technical, visual, music, something. And it's not against the acting, it's just that it's, I don't know how it's going to hold up against what else is playing, yeah. I guess.
What's upcoming. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the movie is, I like the movie a lot. Mm-hmm. And I came out and I was with a friend and we were talking about it and we really both liked it a lot. But we talked about Oscar and, mm-hmm. you know, and its chances. And it's really interesting because it almost seems like it's like one of the, it's a tweener mm-hmm. kind of a movie. It's very good, but, you know, will it stand up to what we might have in store? You know, like, will it stand up to a movie like A Wolf of Wall Street or so, you know,
12 Years a Slave? 12,
I mean, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah,
so it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
I don't think saying something deserves an Oscar doesn't make it
a any better less? Movie. Oh, no, I agree.
I think that, to be clear, it's like sometimes movies win Oscars that the only time I ever saw them was in theater.
Yeah. No,
and
I'm like,
you
know what?
Yeah, that was, you had a brilliant view of this, and yes, you should have won. But I love movies that I can watch over and over again, that I want to share with people, that when someone asks me, oh, have you seen this yet? I'm like, oh, I saw it last week. We can watch it again, no problem. Like, I think you need movies like that. So just because it's not like, this deserves an Oscar for this category.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was just in the setting of this particular, right now, our conversation was Oscar. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's interesting. Right. And I don't think, listen, Ron Howard can continue to go on and he'll, you know, he'll make movies.
Yeah, here we go.
And Heart of the Sea, I think, will be really good. And,
but I think this is one of those movies where people can appreciate the method of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Marissa and I were talking about this. You know, you hear all the sounds, right, of every noise of every engine, and then as soon as the visor goes down, silence,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so it points out these kind of moments, and it heightens them. But I think, you know, the average moviegoer that may not be necessarily thinking of all these things now is you know, can talk about film in a more artistic way rather than just the Avengers of like, oh, that was a cool punch.
Yeah, you know? No, and Marissa, to your point about going in not knowing anything, and you know, there are some people, it's a movie about racing. Like there are, it
just happens to be a racing. Could have been anywhere.
But. And you know, and I think that the marketing, I think that Universal who released it here, I just think it was an uphill battle to market this movie, and they went the only way they could try to go is if you want the women audience to go to this. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, this is a really good movie where racing is just the setting. This is a humanistic story, but that is hard to market. And
well, I think that's why they're using Chris's face, but they're absolutely. That's why they're always saying one of Ron Howard's best films in a year. I mean, that's why they're doing it. They're,
I think it also goes to show the visual aspects of how they actually shot it. All the close-up angles of the racetrack when the cars are flying by the camera lens. It gives, the way they shot it, gave it so many different angles of different, it's sometimes the same path or sometimes the other racetracks, and made even the racing all that more interesting and enforced the audience to look at a different angle.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about that real quick. Since we just talked about the way it was shot, let's get into cinematography.
Yeah. I was going to.
So, and you really appreciate it, Marissa. You thought it was great.
I appreciate it because mm-hmm. when I think of racing, I've been just in, always thought it's a bunch of people going round and round in circles. Mm-hmm. But the way they shot this, I was like, it's not just that.
Well, especially Formula One because they're all over the place.
It's, absolutely. It's about feeling the track and knowing your terrain and what you're driving.
Having
on.
A good butt, so to speak.
Even their surroundings, the rain, how that affects the racing as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I was gonna pick up because cinematographer was Anthony Dodd Mantle. I believe I pronounced that correctly. And he worked on Slumdog Millionaire. He's worked with Danny Boyle.
And Last King's Guy.
And Last King's Guy. And what I loved about the look of this film, to add to what you were saying, it had this great 70s gritty-like look to it.
You know, it reminded me how they shot Le Mans.
Le Mans, a Grand Prix.
Exactly.
Right?
But, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And what the other thing I loved is, obviously, I believe, mm-hmm. I don't know for a fact, but it appeared as if they had used some stock footage of, like, the crash. But if they
I think
did,
they did at some point, yeah. Especially when he was watching it on TV.
But right, but it looked seamless mm-hmm. because it didn't take me out of, like, it wasn't polished. Mm-hmm. It had this gritty look to it from beginning to end, and that got me into the movie even more because it, not only did it capture the time period of the cars, the technology, the clothing, the costuming and everything, but it was the look. When you look at 70s movies, you know, they had that film grit look to it, and that I thought was great for me, and it kept my interest throughout because it wasn't polished. Right. It looked like it came from the 70s.
And?
I mean, I would say the things that stood out most to me were, one, the reference to speed. I felt that they captured that really well. Mm-hmm. Just the momentum of these cars, the power that it ensues from going from the outside of the car to the inside of the car. I really liked that. Also, I mean, for me, I thought that there was a lot of focus on, like, the primary colors throughout this film. Mm-hmm. Blues, reds, yellows. I mean, throw in a lot of white and green and whatnot. And I liked that. I liked that it did feel like I had, like, almost like a classic tone to it. Not like a classic film, but just, like, these classic colors and this, like, basic instinct to drive and capturing that speed. And also the flames and the weather. I thought they embraced that really well, so... On those levels, I liked it.
I like the muffler shots.
Oh, yeah, great stuff. What about you, Phil? You yourself?
Well, for me, I liked how they utilized their visualizations of everything, you know, and even then they kind of vignetted the sides, you know, and made those go out of focus and were, you know, it's just tunnel vision. Because that's what they really had. They had tunnel vision for life.
What did you think? When you talk about focus, what did you think about in the race once Niki Lauda's come back? After being injured, and we see it's raining again, and his vision, it seemed like the perspective was that it was really out of focus from his eyesight, and then as he's racing, it's going into focus, and in the end, it definitely clears up.
Right.
For me, that was a little bit confusing. Like, how did you guys feel?
I think it was a visual thing of him being rattled, and they were just trying to demonstrate that he's off kilter.
He's out of focus. He's not
there.
Focused.
He's not present completely.
I like that they showed that he started into the race not knowing what he was getting into again, like the first race when he got into the crash. But then when it cleared up, it also reflected his mind, like, I get it. I shouldn't be racing. I know where I can end up if I can end up in another crash. So he got metaphorically another that cleared up for him in his mind too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The key was making his decision.
Exactly.
Yeah. I thought so much of this. I really enjoyed a lot of the cinematography. I love it when the camera was on the car and you get that nice long angle shot of the driver on the side and everything. There's so much of it I liked. I have to say, though, the one thing I didn't like, it was just so much. It was too much of the Les Miserables. It was too much of the close-up for me. I wanted, every once in a while, I wanted context. And because for me, sometimes it made it feel small. I'm watching it. Yeah. Because I never got a context. Very rarely did you get a context of the stands or the track. I mean, I don't know if it was a budgetary thing because maybe they just didn't have it.
Here's the thing. For me, it felt like a choice. I didn't, it was always about them. It didn't, okay, so there's fans in the stands. Who cares?
I'm not necessarily talking about fans in the stands. I'm just, as a viewer, you're so in close up so much. I'm going, all right, give me, I just wanted context. Just like I felt in Les Miserables. Everybody hated that for that reason. I was thinking the same thing. I say, please, just a wide shot would be nice every once in a while.
Well, they had some overhead shots.
They did.
The track
I'm not saying they didn't. I'm just saying I liked the close-ups. I thought they were great. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it would have been nice to have a balance.
I'm going to go and say I think that a lot of today's movie-going audience, and I don't mean this to, I don't mean to be offensive here, but I think a lot, you're talking about a race car movie. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the audience today, they're used to Fast and Furious as being, or even a movie like Driven, with Stallone. You're expecting a Rennie Harlan fast cut, and it's just edit, and everything looks fast. To me, this movie really took its time. So you were in the turns with them, and you got to see that tunnel vision, which you're talking about. I like that.
Totally agree with all of that. All I'm saying is there were times when I'm watching it.
They let the scene
and it
play.
Was so in tight mediums and tight
close-ups. Just because you didn't like the needle going down the throat in a close-up doesn't mean you have to hate the movie, John.
I like that, too. I'm not even saying I hate the movie. What I'm saying specifically is... There were times it made it feel small, and I didn't want the movie to feel small. I wanted it to feel bigger than that.
I liked how they had a lot of close-ups to go be devil's advocate. I liked the close-up because it really did bring you into it made it more intense. Intensified everything.
This is why I disagree, because if you don't have anything to compare it to, it's always in close-up.
Who cares? If they brought you out of it with a wide shot, it might have made a crash seem less intense.
Mm-hmm. I mean... But on that note, I felt like one of the widest shots we did get was of Mount Fuji over and over again. Mm-hmm. And what that like represented to the film. And for me, that made that point stand out more. And like, I mean, we consider like where they are, where they've come. And that's the big like ending.
Mountain to climb.
Exactly. But, yeah. So I, mean, I do agree that it wasn't quite, there's definitely, there was no balance between close up and wide, but I did like that they at least included that at some
point. I did too. I just think that it would have benefited from it because more. Then you when every once in a while when you get a wide, then you see the entire landscape in which you're in. And then I think it's more effective every once in a while to do that so that when you come back to a close up, there's some juxtaposition there.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it made the racing to me. A little more personal. It was a personal movie, and I think the racing was I did feel like the rush and on a big screen, and that to me,
absolutely.
You know,
and here's the thing: I'm trying to get across. I agree with that because it did. I felt the intensity of that. I especially loved when the first time a couple of different times when we're showing the cars up close when they're just starting out.
I know.
That overhead shot, you see the gas in the
thing. It was awesome.
I mean, those things are amazing. Yeah. I love that stuff.
And again, it was I just go back to Ron Howard really set everything up. It looked fantastic that way. Yeah. So you wanted more.
I absolutely did. And honestly, as I'm watching it every once in a while, I went, it felt cheap and small. And I just went, I don't want this.
You realize if I see this again, you're probably going to ruin the experience.
I beg your pardon.
I'm going to go, oh, damn it, another close up?
I hope to prove the other way because I don't know. I disagree in terms of, I think there were so many wide shots and things like that.
Yeah.
But.
And I'm not saying that there wasn't. It was more than enough for me.
You know, and...
Well, the budget went to Hans Zimmer. How about that?
There you go. Then speaking of Hans Zimmer, let's move on. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh,
you think that's... So you think they spent a lot of money for the music, do you?
Well, I mean, anytime you get Hans Zimmer, there's got to be some money involved. But...
What'd you think?
I thought it... You know, I thought it worked really well. Again, it was one of those things where if you didn't tell me that was Hans Zimmer, I wouldn't be like, oh, that's Hans Zimmer.
Until the very end.
Yeah.
Until the very, very, I agree. But, yeah.
Did you guys have any favorite musical moments throughout this film?
They used the motif with, Marissa, if you want to play that, they used you kind of knew when something was going to happen, there was kind of the motif and they varied it throughout and it was subtle. You know, their sound effects may not have been subtle, but the music was
the music
a little bit more.
The music was, and for Hans Zimmer, again, had I not known, when I saw the name at the credits, I was like, Hans Zimmer, this had to have been, in my opinion, this is the guy that's done, Man of Steel, Dark Knight Trilogy, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Inception.
Inception. A lot... He has been criticized for being overly bombastic, in your face. And I like a lot of his scores. I have a lot of his soundtracks. This one to me was the most understated Hans Zimmer score for what's essentially a fast-paced racing movie. I agree with you. I thought the bed of music was subtle. It didn't take away from the action at all. But it was at the very, very end, going into the end credits, I was like, that's the Hans Zimmer that I know and love. Everything else I thought played very, for him, it was subtle. And I appreciated that. I was like, hey, wow, that's fantastic. He did I thought the score was fantastic. Towards the end, it was great. Yeah.
I think it goes to show that simple is sometimes easier. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be bombastic like he usually is with fog horns and whatnot. Because I didn't realize it was Hans until the end when they play the credits. I was like, wow, that was amazing. The thing with the music, it really reflected the emotions of what was going on through all the scenes.
I mean, I would just have to say what stuck out most to me is I really wasn't that aware of the music behind a lot of the dialogue. The sound and the music that accompanied the cars, which was what really got me. In the beginning, this big ominous beat that comes with the revealing of the our first race car that we see, and then in the race later on in the film, I want to say it's the one where there's the accident, you get this driving force that you expect to have some sort of climax, and it just never really does. It doesn't let up for, I want to say, over 30 seconds. It's so long and so has your heart pounding. So to me, that's what I was pulling away from sound. That's what I was understanding. I couldn't tell you what the music was like for most of the character conversations.
Here's what could have been most movies would have done. They would have separated out the music for one character and the other character. Mm-hmm. And yep. I like that they didn't go that route because they are one and the same.
They did a little bit, though. They did a little
slight
bit.
Slight variation, I mean, because they're slightly different.
There's right. No, but there's also a lot of, in the 70s tracks that are, like, played, mm-hmm. like
the
back
source
rock
music, tunes, yeah. Uh-huh.
Those are often played behind James Hunt's characters. They're not nearly as much played.
It's because and he's in a nightclub most of the time.
Not even,
but that makes sense.
Not
yeah,
even
okay.
just absolutely. When he's in the nightclub, but yeah. when he's in these other settings where
right.
there isn't
it's party
it's
boy.
Not,
yeah.
Yes, it does. It does follow him a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
what did
a good
you think
point.
Of? What did you think of the score, John?
I wasn't really aware of it. I agree that I didn't even notice it, even paying attention to it during dialogue scenes. I really have nothing to say about it because it didn't
hurt the movie.
I don't even remember it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
See, and to me, that is so unlike a Hans Zimmer mm-hmm. score.
Oh, I agree
at
with
least,
you on that. Yeah.
At least of most recent times of the big yeah. movies mm-hmm. that he has done. You know, score is there. It's in your face. And this one, it was
I
just
do remember.
Nice.
The only musical thing I can remember is when I think it was the first race when Steve Winwood kicked in.
Yeah. Oh, that was awesome.
I thought that was a great moment.
That was great.
That was the only thing I remember musically, to be honest.
Give Me Some Lovin'.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was the only thing I actually remember about.
See, and I kind of like the idea that, yes, they did use that song, but they didn't play a bunch of 70s songs throughout the whole movie. Because right. I feel if you use songs, then you're kind of making your movie in a certain mm-hmm. time period. And this movie is really about the characters, even though they were in 1976 or in the 1970s, that
yeah.
they're making this movie timeless.
Yeah, I agree with you.
With a music score.
And it looked to me, again, just going back to cinematography for a second, it looks timeless. Yeah. Like, it won't get old. Because you know, and they didn't exploit the 70s, right. They just used the 70s as yeah. a setting. So, you know, are we going to talk about some favorite scenes?
Well, we will, but I was just going to talk editing real quick.
Oh, yeah,
Phil is an editor, so we got to get his take on this. Well, why don't
so
you
Phil,
jump in
going
about
to you.
Editing? Well, so, but, and I'll jump in too, right but I want you to think about it because let me say, I agree, it was brisk. I mean, I was laughing at one point because we had the obvious cut too from him. Well, I should say James and the stewardess in the to the cranks and the pistons.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, okay, all right, that's where we're gonna go. All right, you might as well. Okay, go ahead. You know, but,
that's why it was rated R.
Yeah, exactly. But and there was a couple other ones that I thought were neat cutbacks. Anyway,
I liked it because it was you know for a movie like this it was very fast paced. You know, the editing was you know on beat and I liked they tied in a lot of it. We joked about this when we did The World's End mm-hmm. but they had a you know guy cross frame yeah. and this one there was kind of you know if you noticed there was stuff like that and I don't know exactly what it was but mm-hmm. it bled from one to the other and right. especially when they were separate right when yeah. someone's watching TV whether it is you know going back to Susie she's watching James
yeah.
And things like that yeah. or later on. And I like that aspect of it, that it was always flowing from character to character despite the time and space.
Right.
Yeah,
and I thought the editing was taut. And again, he's using guys that he's been working together yeah. with since, like, day one, you know, so...
He's got a good team.
He's got a great team, and it's, number one, the loyalty, but I think, you know, especially when it comes to editing and cinematography, but editing, you get to, bless you, you get to know... like your director and you work as a team because you know what each other you know what you like and it's almost like you can think about ooh all right this is a good cut and I thought that the pacing of the movie it was 2 hours never overstayed its welcome. I didn't get bored. The only thing I was looking at my watches is like when's the crash coming and you know because we knew that was going to happen. I was like I said, I was pleasantly surprised that it came towards the latter end. So, but editing was
before
for
we
me,
get, we want to say Dan Hanley, Mike Hill.
Yep.
So.
There we go.
Okay.
Throw out those names.
Anything you want to say?
I was pretty much agreeing with Phil, and then then I started thinking about it. Anyway, no, about editing. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah.
I don't have too much to say about it, honestly.
It was briskly paced, and it never stayed anywhere too long, and it just. kept moving, but never, and it was never too fast, except when you're in the car. Mm-hmm. But that's the way it's supposed to be.
But it wasn't overcut.
No, not at all.
And I think
when they were racing, it didn't feel that overwhelming, in your face. You felt on the track, but it's not like, oh my God, you're going to crash too.
Yeah, and again, I think it's to the credit of the editors and Ron Howard. It makes it more personal when you're not cutting so fast, and it makes it more humanistic. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see dialogue happening between people and not having to cut all the time. And yeah, it's well done.
We have only a few minutes left. We talked acting throughout, but we haven't specifically any standout acting
performances or
scenes since you mentioned it, Dimitri.
We'll I'll defer to you.
Ladies first.
Unless somebody else is ready to jump in.
I mean, you're going to have to make me think of my favorite scene in this room.
You can top three. I would say
the thing that had my most visceral reaction to was definitely the hospital with Lauda and his scenes with his wife, and definitely the helmet. I actually loved that scene. For Hunt and Hemsworth, I'm trying to think of my favorite scenes. This is more of like a character scene. I know they added him because it didn't happen. Was when he beat up the photographer.
I was just about to say after the press conference.
Yeah. In that little room, I felt like empowered and with
your chair. You cheer. I mean, our audience clapped.
And then
but sorry to cut you off there. They did add that to the movie, but the story when the reporter was asking all those rude questions about his appearance, that actually did happen.
Oh yes. Yeah, but exactly. And the racing scenes. I think I was really carried through this movie by the racing scenes. And although the crash wasn't exploited, I thought that was filmed very well.
Yeah, it was filmed very well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I already talked about earlier the hospital scene with his wife, helmet putting on. But I did love the scene, even if it was made up, I love the scene where Hunt beats up on the reporter. Because it does a couple of things. You go back to the beginning of the movie. Right there it says, you know what, I respect Lauda. I like this guy. He didn't deserve that. Mm-hmm. It's probably my fault. This guy, what a rat he was for doing this and making him do it. And you get that cathartic, and you understand right there and then that what Lauda said at the beginning, we're rivalries. We love to bust each other's balls. And that right there set it apart that they weren't really enemies. They didn't hate each other. That was a sign of great respect to me. And I like that scene a lot there.
Can I add in two more that I just thought of? You put me on first. Now I'm thinking about it. At the beginning of one of the races, it was just a capture of a moment of an exchange between them. You had Hunt kind of ahead in the pack. It's right before they take off, and they turn around and they have a nod to each other, and just like that nod, that moment before they put the visor down. And it was great to me that it was Lauda who looked away first, and you still got Hunt kind of staring back, waiting for him to break the contact, and taking that moment of acknowledgement of getting ready. I loved that. Just those little instances were really fun for me.
Again, made it humanistic.
Mm-hmm.
That was one.
I had another one, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Okay, you think about it while Phil talks, and then you can add it.
Not another one.
Well, I'm a Nicky kind of guy. I liked him a lot.
Oh, yeah. No.
I did. But that's also because I saw him. He was in Goodbye, Lenin.
Oh, you mean the actor. Okay.
Yes, the actor. And he did really fantastic in that. And so, I kind of recognized him right away from that.
I liked him from Inglourious Bastards. Yeah. That's what I recognized him from.
Yes, which I assume would be most people instead of Goodbye, Lenin.
Yeah. Phil, you're done because I remembered my
other one. Go ahead.
When we get to see Lauda have a little fun when he first meets Marlene, and they have the two fans in the back. And first you get the classic woman on the side of the road hitchhiking.
Right.
And of course, and then the two fans just go straight up to Lauda and with such recognition. And then we see that shift where he does just take decide to take their car and Pardon drive fast.
And that was a good bait and switch scene, too.
I think that was a great sequence.
Yeah,
I love that.
That was a great sequence.
Yeah, really.
Because it's all character. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to drive fast. I don't have a, you know, it's all very computer-like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I thought that was great.
That was a great scene.
I appreciated Daniel's acting a lot in this. I thought Chris did a fine job, but I really liked watching Daniel perform. The scenes I liked were the ones when he told his wife that happiness is the enemy. God, that's a brutal scene. Your wife right there, happiness is the enemy. Basically, you should tell her that. Yeah, this is not going to work. This is not good for me.
Yeah, it's not a great way to start a honeymoon.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That was great.
But in his own way, I like the scene where they go, you know, he says, I have a family event that I have to get to.
Yeah.
Little do we know that it's him getting married.
Exactly. Says, you know, and even that, the scene where he proposes, well, if I'm going to do this, might as well be with you.
Yeah, yeah.
She's but he's sincere
woman.
In his own
yes.
way.
Yes, he actually meant that.
Quite
because
a poet.
We see with James and Susie, they just get married like immediately afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then this, we've seen Marlene for a while. We've come to like her character. Mm-hmm. And then we understand he really does mean that when
I'm not debating that. I think he does mean it, but
it's just funny.
The depth of which he means it and how he says it. Fascinating.
And again, and I think it's, by the way, Daniel Brühl played it. I think it was great.
And then I also really love the scene at the end between the two guys, between Hunt and when they're in the little airport hangar.
Airplane
hangar. I thought that was great. Yeah. And also the scene right after that when you're actually hearing, I assume it's the actual Niki Lauda's voice.
Yeah.
Talking about that, you're seeing the actual archival footage of them, and that was very effective.
And again, it didn't take away from the movie.
Not at all.
Because
Not
it looked...
For me, it enriched it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole voiceover at the end with him saying, "I he was one of the few I liked, even fewer that I respected, and the only one I envied." I thought that was the best moment of the movie. I wanted more of that throughout.
Yeah, I understood.
It wouldn't have meant as much.
It may not have.
If the whole movie was like
We could have hit that a few more times. I mean, you know. All right, any last words? What do we want to talk about? Any last things we want to say?
No, I think Rush is great, and thank you for joining.
You're saying go see it, everybody's...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but we're assuming you've seen it already, and hey, the federal government may not be here for you, but Anatomy of a Movie... We're here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're working. You know, this great group of non-essential personnel, we are here for you today, October 1st.
Final thoughts. Go see the movie. Let's see.
We imagine you have.
Yeah. We hope you have. Otherwise, the spoilers
go
are crazy.
Go see it again.
Yeah, there you go.
Take your friends to go with you.
Yeah, take a friend.
James Hunt has my dog in there. That giant dog. It's huge. Shaggy. It's in the back of the car.
Oh, all right. Okay.
No. Don't worry about it.
Excellent.
How do you spell Ferrari?
I love this movie, and I have a greater respect for the people, the drivers, the art of what racing really is.
Yeah.
All
right.
So. I like Nikki telling Ferrari to fuck off. You have all these test facilities, and this is the crap you put out.
Oh, that was great,
that
too.
Was awesome
anyway,
too.
That was great.
Yeah.
All right.
Good movie. All
right. Follow us at, what is it? Movie Anatomy?
At Movie Anatomy.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
There we go.
John, check out our new website that we are currently building. Is the website up? Can we give that info out?
Check out Anatomy of a Movie, Movie Anatomy on Twitter, all that fun stuff. We're here for the long haul. Thank you guys for being a part of this. We'll see you at the next screening!
Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.